Welcome to Ag in Uncertain Times, a webinar series intended to assist ag professionals meet the challenges developing in today's agriculture. Today will be our final webinar focusing on families facing uncertainty. I'm John Hewlett, and I'll be your host for today's webinar presentations. However, there are many others on our team working behind the scenes to help make these presentations possible, and I want to give a special thanks to all of them for all their assistance, because without them this would really be quite a challenge to pull off. This morning's presentation will be focusing on the tools and techniques available to farm families coping with stress. And we'll learn a little more also about communication strategies and approaches to help minimize that stress within the family unit. And the process for this morning is we'll ask a few polling questions at the beginning to try to get a little better handle on who all is in our audience today. We'll then have our two formal presenters, followed by a question and answer period after each of those presentations. And then we'll follow up at the end with kind of a Q&A of both of them at the final point. Today's presenters are Ruth Hamilton, who's coming to us from Illinois and is a founder of the Annie's Project, which is an education program for farm women. We also have with us Dr. Robert Fetch from Colorado State University, who serves as a human resource extension specialist at that institution. Now, in order to provide questions from our audience to the speakers, we have a chat window here at the lower left portion of your screen where you can enter the questions that you'd like to have put to the presenters. You just go ahead and click on the question box there. Type in what it is you'd like to have put to them and click on the button to the right, which will submit it. Our team will then take those questions and put them together, combine them where needed, and send them to me, and I will ask them of the presenters in our Q&A sessions. I might also point out that if you have any kind of technical details or questions that you might be experiencing problems or whatever, that you can also send those in via that question chat pod, and our team will get back to you from behind the scenes and try to assist you if you have any kind of technical problems. We've had a number of different webinars offered in here since June. Today is our 12th in the series. We started off by focusing on uncertain credit and hosted a series of presentations by lenders and others across the country on that topic. In September, we offered several programs looking at uncertain markets and had a number of presenters on that set of topics as well. This month, we're focusing on families facing uncertainty in agriculture, and again, today represents our last in that series of programs. All of our previous webinars have been recorded and are available at our website, Ag in Uncertain Times, which we'll provide some detailed instructions on how to access a little later on. Where do we go from here? Well, our topics for November are operating in a risky environment, and we will be focusing on various tools and techniques, an outlook on risk as it's currently shaping up in agriculture, and how managers might actually get started planning for and managing the risks and for the coming production cycle. Our first program will be held on November 4th this coming month, and we will have the same start times as we've had in the past, which is 9 Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, and noon Eastern Time. Another effort currently underway across the country in extension is called Managing in Tough Times. For this, a website has been put together to house materials and information for extension professionals and others looking to help ag producers address the challenges of today's economy. We encourage you to take a look at this impressive set of information found at mitnet.extension.org. If you're having a little trouble seeing the on-screen material in today's webinar, you can click on the full screen toggle that's there at the lower portion of your screen, and that will enlarge the textual material to be full screen. You can click that again to toggle it back to view both the chat pod and the text material as well. So if you're having a little trouble viewing that, that button might be able might be one way to help address that. And before we launch into our formal presentation, we've got a couple of questions that we'd like to ask of the audience to understand just a little better who all is participating this morning and what some of your perspectives are. So if you wouldn't mind quickly responding to some of these questions we'll put up here. The first of which is, what region of the country are you located in? We've got several different choices there: north, south, southeast, southwest, etc. If you just click on the appropriate button to select your vote, we would appreciate that. This helps us get a better sense of, again, who all's participating and from where they're operating. This next question is, where are you actually participating in the webinar? Are you at home, in an office? How many individuals are actually there with you, whether it's just yourself or if there are several others that might be participating in the room? We've had several groups reported that have tuned in on these over time, and so those have been interesting to learn about as we've gone along. This next question is asking if you wouldn't mind to tell us a little more about what your primary occupation is, whether you're an agricultural producer, an extension professional, a lender perhaps, other agribusiness professional, whether you're a commodity organization employee, etc. So if you'd, again, just make the appropriate choice there. Another question we've got, we'd like to ask, how many producers in your area that you've worked with? Do you have a long career of working with individuals? Have you just recently moved into this role and don't have a lot of experience in working with producers in financial stress? If you could fill us in on that, we'd appreciate it. Again, these questions are very helpful to us trying to prepare the topics and organize the speakers for our upcoming programs to understand where folks in the audience are actually coming from and what kind of backgrounds you all have and experience you've had in working with producers across the country. Another question here is, how many households, if you are an agricultural producer, does your operation support? Is it just one, two, or are there several families that might be involved? Or then the final choice there is, if you are not an agricultural producer at all. This will be our last question then, and we'll be moving now to our first presenter. So without further ado, I'll start our formal introduction of Ruth Hamilton, who's our first presenter this morning. And Ruth has served as the founder of Annie's Project and the president of Annie's Project, which is an education for farm women, a not-for-profit organization in Illinois. For those who are not familiar, the Annie's Project is an educational program dedicated to strengthening farm women's roles in the modern farm enterprise. Ruth is retired from a 30-year career with University of Illinois Extension and has a long connection with agriculture. She grew up and is a farmer's daughter and then married a farmer. Ruth and her husband of 31 years raised three children on a 40-acre hog, beef, and hay farm, and she's currently working with her sister and two brothers to help manage their father's 320-acre farm in northern central Illinois. Although I've not personally met Ruth, she comes very highly recommended for her efforts with Annie's Project and other programs that she's been involved in her career. And so we're very pleased to welcome her and to host her on this webinar series. The title of her presentation this morning is Tools and Techniques of the Family Business and How to Make Assignments and Carry Out Business Plans. So Ruth, if you'd key up your microphone and if you're ready, you can go ahead now and begin your presentation. And again, thank you for joining us for this program this morning.
Well, thank you very much, John, for those kind words. Hello to everyone. In addition to the information that John provided you about myself, I'll also let you know that through my personal life and through my professional work with the University of Illinois Extension, I have had the responsibility to work with farm families through all their peaks and valleys. I've counseled farm families from the 80s, the 90s, and now as an entrepreneur, I am preparing to work with farm families again through my work with farm women and the program Annie's Project Education for Farm Women. So let me go ahead and tell you a little bit about Annie's Project. We'll start with our vision statement, and our vision is to bring financial security and well-being to women in rural communities where food, fiber, and fuel production are synonymous with family. You can shorten this one down to, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Women are half the world population, and at least that in the agriculture communities where Annie's Project is offered. To make the vision come true, the mission of Annie's Project is to empower farm women to be better business partners through networks and by managing and organizing critical information. The mission came about as the result of the life of a woman who married a farmer in northern Illinois in July of 1947. For 50 years, this woman spent her life putting a lot of pieces together to raise a family, to take care of her mother-in-law for the first 25 years of her marriage, and to develop a successful farm business. Annie's Project is modeled after the life of my mother, Annette Kollegen Fleck, who passed in 1997. At the inception of Annie's Project in 2003, I used her life as my inspiration to put a program together to help and educate farm women. She herself was a town girl who visited her grandparents' farm just outside of town every weekend. It was there that she fell in love with farm life and, in fact, fell in love with her farmer while plucking pin feathers from turkeys. Annie, as all her friends called her, was going to need all her love of the farm to stick with it. She was the record keeper, immaculate and analytical. It was Annie who, with her records in hand, helped make transitions that any farm would go through. Transitions are tough enough, but her records proved to be a light in dark times when hard decisions had to be made. Bottom line to this life is she and her farmer raised four children and carved a prosperous life out of a combination of off-farm work, careful dollar management, and constantly shifting resources to their best use. As smart as my mother was, she could have used some help and support, and that is what Annie's Project is all about, a program designed for farm women by farm women. Women attend six sessions, lasting about 3 hours each for a total of 18 hours of instruction. Learning is hands-on, and for about half of the women, this is their first time handling computers, jump drives, and exploring what this technology can offer them. The core curriculum is introductory level risk management topics, and each class is adapted to the local needs. Each class has an opportunity to graduate on to a level 2 subject for advanced learning. Okay, John, this one's showing some blanks here, so I'm going to have to talk through a narrative for you folks here. The curriculum is a unique blend of two worlds in which farm women must operate. On the right is the farm and is the family and consumer economics side of family life, and the topics that they cover is family life, nutrition and health, Resource Management, and Family General. On the left are the five areas of risk management as defined by USDA: production, financial, market, human resources, and legal risk. What lies in between the two distinct educational areas is an area of commonality: estate planning, retirement planning, investment, and financial risk. The methodology of teaching the exact same topics as what's offered to students and traditional male audience is what makes Annie's project effective. We look for local sponsors who share the same passion for education for farm women in their roles. Preference is given to women presenters, but certainly we also have a long list of men instructors who are effective as well. Women learners are group learners. They share more openly and will reach out to women in the group who need mentoring. They are relaxed and overcome some of the more common barriers to learning in that they don't feel judged in this environment. So what does Annie's Project do? The learning environment for Annie's Project can be summed up in six words. Safe harbor, meaning a non-judgmental and secure environment for opening up and sharing experience. No question is out of bounds. We earn the trust of women in our classes. Connection. Connection to each member of the group, to presenters who will become a familiar resource on their risk management teams, and to an ever-growing Annie's Project community. Networking, especially in trying times, is a powerful resource for these families. Discovery. The aha moment when something becomes a little clearer, when women discover they now have something to contribute. And finally, guided intelligence, the realization that at any one time there is a woman in the audience with more knowledge or experience than the presenter. Annie's Project draws on her experience and she becomes mentor to other women in the class. Each participant completes a baseline survey that acts as an outline of what they can expect to learn. The survey consists of 50 questions divided by the five risk areas. We then follow up with women sometime after they take the class with the same set of questions and compare the differences in their responses. From this survey, they tell us that what their concerns are for the farm. In the order of concern, and by the way, we've been doing this list now since 2003 up to, we're just finishing the 2009 survey, so in the order, debt is at the top of their list, followed by profitability, marketing, transition retirement, estate issues, and leasing issues. Participants also take a personality test to determine their true core. Most of our participants are gold, followed by blue, a few green, and a few oranges. And let me go ahead and specify what those colors mean. Gold personalities are the organizers. They follow the rules, they like punctuality and order. Blue personalities are the peacemakers, the heart of the farm. They like harmony and are very nurturing. Green personalities are the thinkers and the analyzers. They need information and time to look over all their options. Orange personalities are the risk takers, some would say the fun ones. Give them the end result and get out of their way as they create their own path to success. Regardless of their personality color, all women attend Annie's Project to improve their skills and contribute in meaningful ways. Knowledge is a very powerful resource, and women know and respect that. Anyone who has ever farmed understands that every day brings a new set of challenges. Annie herself had to deal with some pretty big fires. It's not that you can avoid all fires, that's not possible, but you can be prepared by thinking ahead and having all the necessary tools in place to take on challenges. We call the concept important versus urgent. Examples of this concept. Farmers are huge consumers of debt. Women have told us that this is their number one concern. And what role can they play in this concern? We prepare women to understand debt. We prepare women to take an active role in balance sheet preparation, in keeping day-to-day financial records, and in measuring profitability. By tying these three financial documents together, women see their role in a bigger picture. We don't prepare women to become accountants, but rather we demystify the process of balance sheet, cash flow, and income statement. Be like Annie. Have your records in order. Prepare your balance sheet the same day each year and not when the banker tells you. And for goodness sakes, take the banker your income statement, not your Schedule F, as so often is the request. Another example of important versus urgent is life insurance. No one plans to die suddenly, so if the most unfortunate event should occur, there is a properly structured insurance plan in place to allow a farm to continue as was initially planned. So as I near the end of this portion of the program, here are five tools or educational programs we put in the hands of farm women, preparing them to be an active decision maker. Two of these I'll go into detail, Ag Plan and Investing for Farm Families, both of which are free online ag resources. The financial tools that we work with, record-keeping packages like Quicken and QuickBooks and others that can be adapted state by state. We work on the balance sheet, income statement, cash flows. We work on organizing information for lenders and tax preparers. That is a huge stressor in these families, and by having information pulled together, much like Annie did, what can be a stressful time really becomes just a business rule, business activity in the day. Women in money category, we work with them on getting their leasing agreements in writing and a discussion about ownership, how different properties are titled. We cover marketing, where their income is generated, and we discuss issues of retirement and estate planning. A very important tool for women, a group who understands and shares their life, that community organization that family feel beyond the family house, is so important for women if they are going to be in a stressful situation on these farms. And of course, local contacts for their risk management team. This is part of what the presenters do for the Women in Annie's Project. They become that contact that a woman can call and discuss different issues with. So let's take a few minutes to talk about Ag Plan. I understand that it's already been covered in some other sessions, but what I'd like to focus on is how the women use Ag Plan in Annie's Project. Ag Plan is a favorite in class because more lenders are asking for a business plan as part of a loan package. It's very empowering to have one started or even completed, depending on how ambitious a woman might be after learning about this resource. So much is pulled together in a business plan. Missions and goals, marketing plans, leasing agreements, financial records, history, that to put one together on short notice and on a banker's demand is a pretty stressful day. Women have this tool at their disposal now. They are instructed to work on the plan a piece at a time, and little by little, a full-blown business plan emerges in cooperation with all those who need to be involved. Examples of those who need to be involved would be spouses. If it's adult children, they'll need to be involved. Lenders, extended family members, all those who are involved in the family planning process. Women want to contribute to the success of an operation, and this is one area where that can happen with a big impact. The website is free and secure, so updating and adding to or changing a business plan as needed is easy. And when you can do that, it reduces the stress in these families. Yes, women need an email to sign up for this website. Most in the class have email, a few do not. So as a bonus, we set them up an address for their future use. On the Ag Plan website, when you sign into it, there is a convenient 2-minute video that takes you through navigating and some of the special features of Ag Plan, and I encourage everyone to click on that button for your first visit to the Ag Plan website. We start women by having them select the template best fitted to their needs. There are four that are available at this website: the commodity, value added, small business, and commercial fishing. And then the fun begins. Like I said, a lot goes into a business plan, but we teach women to deal with important issues one at a time, so to avoid urgent situations as much as possible. What is circled in red, mission statements, goals, business history, and ownership structure, become the foundation for homework assignments and permission for women to study in open discussions about their farms. With the feature of Ag Plan, only the categories used will show up in the final printout, so a plan can be as simple or as complex as needed. And just picture filling these in one at a time, just taking your time building a good business plan that your lender could appreciate. Here is the address for Ag Plan, along with the contact number for Kevin Clare at the Farm Management Center, University of Minnesota. He was chair of the group that worked on this project, funded by the Trade Adjustment Assistance, United States Department of Labor. The second website, an empowering tool to highlight for this program, is a brand new e-extension website, Investing for Farm Families. Funded by a grant from FINRA Investor Education Foundation, the online tool was opened on October 1st, so when I say it's new, it's brand new, and is being used in Annie's project classes in Illinois, Iowa, and Missouri. The initial feedback is very friendly and encouraging. Participants need to register for the course by creating a username and password and the usual registration information. They are then put into an 8-unit self-study course that is supported by an underlying 11-unit self-study course, Investing for Your Future. Women can use convenient links to the 11 units to go as deep into self-education about investment tools as they desire. Each of the 8 units has a set of goals specific to farm families' investment education. Especially valuable are the 15 interactive worksheets and spreadsheets that are linked throughout the lessons. Again, we use these worksheets in our Annie's Project to help women think through the important issues before they become urgent. Because we can only go so deep in a Level 1 Annie's Project, we have plans to develop a second level program using this website as the core curriculum. And let's take a look at the 15 resources that are attached to this online course. And what we will be doing in Annie's Project is these 15 resources, spreadsheets and fact sheets, will be downloaded to their jump drives that we hand out at the beginning of the course. They are interactive spreadsheets that women download, work on, and then can save it for future use. The first one is Financial Emergency Preparedness Worksheets. This is the one that pulls together where's your insurance policies, where's your wills, where are important documents. The second one is the Integrated Balance Sheet and Personal Net Worth Exercise, which I find to be extremely valuable in illustrating to women how much of their personal life is tied up in these farm operations. There is a graph that is developed after they put their information in, a visual display of what belongs to the farm and what is personally theirs. And the image is quite stunning. It lets women know how a critical role that these farms are going to play in their future retirement and estate planning issues. There is an estimated expense and emergency cash reserve worksheet that I myself used and found to be excellent. My cash reserves need to be $14,000, and by some stroke of intuitive luck, that's what I have in my emergency cash reserve. There's an insurance evaluation and goal worksheet that help the women think through, are they properly insured and are they paying the right amount of dollars for those insurance policies. We have a financial goal setting worksheet and train them how to receive their free copy of their credit report. We also take them into the Uniform Commercial Code lending record so they can learn to look up what theirs leans against. Particular fund, one that I used in a recent Annie's project, was the Investment Risk Tolerance Quiz. And in the group that I used it on, the youngest was 25, the oldest was in her mid-60s, and true to the cause, you could just see how that score on that risk tolerance quiz was related to the age of the women in the group. And so, without reading through the rest of them there, you can see that this is an extremely valuable organization of some spreadsheets that women, if they start working on them now, can take important issues and keep them out of the urgent category. For course material, enrollment, and resources, here is the web address that you may visit. It's www.extension.org/pages, Investing for Farm Families. And on this one, folks, the capitalization does make a difference, so you'll have to pay attention to that. The easiest way to get to it is word search, Investing for Farm Families. So I'm coming to the conclusion of the formal presentation here. I would like to thank the Western Extension Committee for thinking to ask me to come present to this program today, and also a shout out to the Western Center for Risk Management Education for putting this program together. Extremely valuable here. So here are my recommendations for working with women and audiences as we prepare families for harder times. Number one, we want to empower farm women with skills. Number two, provide update and accurate information, accurate data for their use in making decisions that somewhat could be tough. We need group support for women, and how you do that through an Annie's project, or just some other programs that I know that are developing out there. Group support I have found to be extremely important, and preparation start now. These kinds of things are inevitable. I've lived through 35 years of this kind of up and down in agriculture, and all the preparation that you can give it, I will tell you, does have positive impact at the end. So I'd like to say thank you to everyone. My contact information is on the screen there. And any questions that I may take at this time?
Well, Ruth, thank you very much for a very insightful presentation. Obviously, insights gained by a lot of years in the trenches and working with folks to really make a difference in their families and their families' lives. We have got a number of questions that have come in from the audience, and not sure if we'll be able to get to all of them just now. But to begin, the first is a question from one person wondering whether there are still topics that are off the table or sort of taboo to actually bring up with women's groups. Have you experienced that with Annie's group in your presentations there?
The unique thing between a all-male audience and a female audience, the male audiences will not share. There are things on the table that they will not talk about. Women, on the other hand, I have found them to not have that same instinct. They will share positively everything. But remember, one of our rules in the Annie's Project is that safe harbor. What we talk about stays in the room. People respect that. And if women don't want to share, that's fine. What they will do, for instance, when we do the balance sheet analysis, they are invited to bring their balance sheets with them to the class. Nobody looks at them. And while we're going through the exercise, they're applying the information directly to their balance sheets. So, women audiences, we share.
Okay, well, I guess that's not too surprising to me, but interesting, because certainly you have the experience to speak to that. Are men eligible for this program? Do you actually allow men to participate as well?
We do say that because we are an open program, that men are allowed to join it, but we do let them know that the dynamics of the class changes when men are present. I have experimented with having mixed audiences, men and women, and I will tell you that it was not a successful exercise. The women immediately just did not speak. the men were sitting back, you know, arms folded, you know, just challenging the presenter to teach me anything, and it was not a very good experience. So we try to avoid the mix. We can't keep it from happening. I did have one class where a fellow joined it, and he was adopted very well by the women. So I will say men do change the dynamics.
It's amazing how important our roles in gender are when we interact with others, despite what we may try to tell ourselves. Okay, thank you for those insights. I'm wondering, are there any thoughts or insights you might offer, because you guys in the project obviously deal with farm finances pretty closely, but you mentioned that also addresses family finances. How do you, any recommendations or insights you might have on how to separate those two, especially where credit card debt is so much used by today's families, which a lot of times crosses those lines?
And that is something that we are moving towards, separating out the personal life from these farm businesses. The spreadsheet that I referred to on the website, Investing for Farm Families, is an excellent way to start that. There are several resources out there that will allow you to do a personal balance sheet first, then do a business balance sheet, and then do the consolidated balance sheet together. You've hit on a very good point. For many, many years, we've been trained to do consolidated balance sheets, and everything personal goes right in with that farm business balance sheet. We are working to do the division there, to make people aware of how much they have wrapped up in these things, what the risks they've got. If the farm goes down, what does that mean for their retirement years, for the family that's expecting to inherit a farm operation?
Okay. Another good question here is, what techniques or process is used or suggested by the Annie's Project to the participants for incorporating their newly attained skills into the farm operation without actually representing a threat to the management, so to speak?
I absolutely love this question. I don't know who's asking it, but boy, are you spot on with this. I'm going to say that three-quarters of the women that we deal with, they are enthusiastically welcomed home to share the knowledge that they have gained in their class. There is that other 25% that they are there because they can't get information. And the one that I'll relay to you is a four-way partnership, two brothers, two wives. And the brother who was in charge of the records was absolutely horrible. His records were in his head. He didn't share them with any of the other partners. And so the woman was in Annie's project to just try to get a handle on what she could do for records. So we started her on a Quicken program. And the update to her story is they saw her way was working, that it was better than this brother who had stuff in his head. So it was a threat in the beginning, but she remained consistent, persistent, very professional. The information that she could pull off of this, out of her Quicken records, the reports were just so much better than what was coming out of this brother's head that the transition is now in place. So if you're doing things and you're doing things right and for the right reason, that threat eventually dissolves away for that other 25% of the women who experience that.
Okay. Excellent insights. I was wondering that myself, and I know it's a challenge. So we have a number of other questions, but I think we'll put those off until our Q&A at the end. And thank you again, Ruth. Don't go away, because we will have a few other questions for you. But I'd like to move now to our next presenter. Bob Fetch is a human resource specialist at Colorado State University and is nationally recognized for his research and outreach in mental health issues for farmers. Bob has a family dairy background, so he understands firsthand the challenges and issues facing farm families today. In his position at CSU, Bob focuses mainly on stress, coping strategies, risk and resiliency of farm families, suicide prevention, anger management, and child abuse prevention. I've personally worked with Bob on several different projects over the years, and I've always found him to be very dedicated and absolutely committed to the farm families he serves. We're very fortunate that Bob was able to squeeze today's program into his schedule, as he's in great demand these days with presentations being offered all across the country. The title of Bob's presentation today is Who Copes Well in Tough Times, where he'll share his insights on how individuals and families can better deal with the challenges ahead. So, Bob, if you've got your mic ready and are ready to begin, I would invite you to take it away from here. And thank you again for joining us this morning.
Thank you, John and Wayne, for inviting me to be a part of it. Pleasure to be here. And thank you, Ruth, for that very insightful and very practical approach to assisting women in farm families. Being the son of a farmer and the brother of a farmer, I can really see how valuable what you had to present there would be for my sister-in-law, and if my mother was still alive, for her as well. So thank you, Ruth, very much. Well, welcome to this Who Copes Well with Tough Times for Families Facing Uncertainty in Agriculture. It's a pleasure to be here. Well, what do we now know? We have current research-based information, especially from Hamilton McCubbin and his cadre of students that have looked at the family stress research. And from their work, we know practical steps that you and I can take to manage challenging times. We know who copes well and who copes poorly with tough, challenging times, and who copes the same with family stress. And I want to go over some of that to you in my 20 minutes that I have. We know that this economic recession that we're in, I see some places are now calling it the Great Recession, that the worse things get, the more likely you and I are to see a friend or family member who experiences stress, anger, depression, and suicidal thinking. And as John mentioned, that seems to be a pretty important topic across the country right now in terms of various groups of farm and ranch families that need help around that. Well, what does the research say? Benjamin and others found that difficulty with money has been reported as one of the leading causes of marital stress and divorce, and increasing debt contributes to negative marital quality. And those of us who are in coupled relationships like that can probably vouch for what the research shows as well. And we can conclude that the longer the current economic recession goes and lingers, especially on agricultural families, the more incidences of depression we're likely to see. It's very much integrated. As we look at the psychological aspects of what people experience as well as the financial sides, we can see the integration of financial hardship with stress, family conflict, and turmoil. The last example that Ruth shared was a great example in which four business partners had some issues with each other, and the stress that that woman surely must have been experiencing, and maybe the others as well, with the brother who had all the records in his head. That leads to family conflict and turmoil. It leads to depression and emotional problems, particularly when people feel helpless and powerless. And it leads to disruption of family relationships. Well, what are the signs of stress? One of the handouts that Dwayne and John have already put on the website for you that you'll be able to pick up later or go to during this website webinar, you can go to mine, you'll see in the next slide. But I have a checklist. And some of the signs of farm and ranch stress include a change in routines. Maybe the rancher or ranch family stops attending church or drops out of 4-H, no longer stops at the coffee shop. There might be an increase in illness. The appearance of the farmstead may decline. The care of livestock may decline. Increased farm and ranch accidents. And always I tell people, particularly if you have younger children, you might watch and see what they're experiencing, because when the family is experiencing stress, many times the little children will be barometers or canaries in the family that will tell you there's trouble going on. We can watch for signs of chronic prolonged stress physically: headaches, ulcers, backaches, eating irregularities, exhaustion. Emotional life includes sadness, depression, anger, loss of spirit, loss of humor. Behavioral, people might get more irritable, backbiting, acting out, withdrawal, alcoholism, violence. Memory loss, I just can't remember how to do things. I can't make decisions. I'm a failure. Those are some of the signs we might look for in ourselves and our family members. In this Farm and Ranch Family Stress and Depression, a checklist and guide will be available at the end of today's presentation. Or you can go here now to, if you'll Google Fetch, F-E-T-S-C-H, at Colorado State and look for the human side of agriculture, you can find this particular checklist. Farm Ranch is a third bullet there. Well, we certainly know that farm and ranch families are in a stressful time right now in terms of what's going on. There are many reasons for that, or many reasons why farm and ranch families experience stress. Sometimes they experience drought, and out here in Colorado, this year was the best year for moisture that we've seen in the past 8 years. Prior to that, 7 years of drought have certainly been a real challenge for many families. As ponds dried up and have to pump water for the cattle. In Britain, the foot and mouth disease a few years back was a serious threat, and if it ever does come here, it will be a very serious threat here too. But over and above that, we know from the research that farm owners are among the top 12 occupations with high stress-related illnesses. And we know that farmers and ranchers and miners have the highest rate of disabling injuries and fatalities. It's not just farmers or ranchers that experience high stress, but overall, Americans, 3 out of 4 Americans in one study report that they have at least some stress every 2 weeks, and half of those experience moderate or high levels during the same time period. And according to the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, farm owners were second only to laborers in the rate of death for stress-related diseases. So we're in a very stressful, dangerous occupation. Now, what were some of the top stressors for farmers? In one of the Iowa studies that had 1,343 Iowa farm residents, the top stressors were death of a spouse, and this is consistent since the 50s from the Holmes-Rae scale, that the death of a spouse is over and over the top priority, the top major stressor that people experience. Then death of a child, right up next to that. Disabling injury of self or family member, foreclosure on a mortgage or loan is a big issue. Divorce, machinery breakdown during harvest, loss of crop to weather, pests or diseases, and other weather conditions were other stressors that Iowa farmers talked about. This is from a newer study, also in Iowa, from farm men who were more likely to experience depression if within the past year they had lost something of sentimental value, experienced substantial income decline, if they have gone deeply into debt and faced legal problems, or experienced an increase in health problems. Seems to be very timely with regard to the tough economic times we're in. Well, I often like to ask my groups, who is the canary in farm and ranch families? And study after study from land-grant universities, we find that it is often the daughter-in-law who is the person who we need to get to know, the dads do, in order to be able to predict when the family is in trouble. Because if she is highly stressed, it can be dangerous, particularly if she gets a divorce and either takes the farmer's son away from them where they leave the family, or she gets a divorce and they have to sell the valuable valley lands here in Colorado. I got that a little bit mixed up. Either way, if they get divorced or if they don't get divorced and move away from the farm, either of those can be threats if she is very unhappy. So I always recommend to the dads and grandfathers, get to know your daughters-in-law. They can be a very big help to you. Well, I already said farming and ranching are among the most dangerous occupations in the U.S., and the AgriAbility Project is a federally funded project that if you know of some farmer or rancher with a disability or other challenge in Wyoming, you can contact Randy Weigel, and here in Colorado, you can contact me. And here are my numbers and contact information, and we can assist people with disabilities because we provide information, education, and assistance to them. Most of the farmers and ranchers I know are resilient. They're survivors, they have optimism, they know how to bounce back from tough times. How else would we have made it this far? Well, let's say all of us online today, and there appear to be about 35 sites that are on, let's say all of us experience loss of the loss of the family farm, that it gets taken away from us because of the financial situation we're in. What's going to make the difference in 3 to 5 years as to who of us will be better off, who's going to be worse off, and who's going to be about the same? We know from the family stress research done in all kinds of places that about a third of us are going to be better off in 3 to 5 years, about a third of us will be about the same, and about a third will be worse off. And this graph shows what I'm talking about here. As you look at the level of organization the family has before the crisis, that is the loss of the family farm, some of them are going to be about the same in 3 to 5 years. Some are going to be worse off and some are going to be better off than they were. In which group will you and I be? That depends on three things. One, how much pileup we experience. Two, how well we use our existing and new resources. And three, how well we manage our perception of the stressors. I'd like to take a little time to talk about each of those three. What do we mean by pileup? We mean what else happens to the family in addition to the loss of the family farm. Do they experience drought, blizzard, crop failure, flood, tornado, tractor or combine turnover, serious vehicle accident, multiple sclerosis, back problems, a birth, a divorce, maybe a child has HIV or AIDS, maybe a parent has Alzheimer's disease. If a family experiences these, that adds to pileup. How much pileup do we experience? It includes the new stressor as well as previously existing strains and future hardships that the family experiences. So the second question was, how well do we use our existing and new resources? There are internal resources and external resources. Internal ones are like the family, maybe someone has maybe a farm wife has a particular intelligence related to being able to manage the records and all. Maybe a family member has problem-solving skills or physical-emotional health, or is very optimistic. Maybe a child has a sense of humor that is one of those existing resources in the family. Then there are external family crisis meeting resources as well, how the family bonds of trust. Is appreciation expressed more often than resentments? Does the family have harmony? They have sound finances and positive communication skills and conflict resolution. How's their quality of life and their family support? Do they avail themselves externally of Alzheimer's disease support group or counselors or therapists or guidance counselors or priests, ministers, rabbis, friends and neighbors or the Colorado Agribility Project? We need to remember what Tom Peters said, perception is reality. We need to monitor our perceptions of losing the family farm in this case, because our brain doesn't know the difference between our imagined reality and what is really happening. Our body and our brain will take whatever we give it, whether it's a threat or an opportunity, and will go with that. Some of the research we did in the 80s here, many of the people that are part of the planning of this whole webinar were part of a study we did in the mid-80s, an interdisciplinary research study, in which we asked a series of questions. We checked people's in farmers and ranchers in Colorado and Wyoming in terms of their depression levels, their stress levels, their overall well-being levels, etc. We also asked a series of five questions. What was your income last year, your debt last year, your overall assets and net worth, and your overall debt load? And immediately following that was a question we asked, as you think about your overall financial situation, how does it look to you from dismal to excellent? When we ran the correlations between each of those variables and the stress level and depression levels, what we found was there was a low correlation between the first four and a high correlation between the perception, the overall outlook. We had some people who had $1 million income last year who said their situation was about in the middle. And if so, then their stress and depression levels also appeared to be about mid-level. Versus some that only had $30,000 last year and said, we're doing pretty well. And if they saw their overall financial situation as pretty well, then also their stress levels were low and their depression levels were low. This corroborated the role of perception as we deal with tough times. Challenging times bring all kinds of new life changes, time to think back to what worked best. One of the things I like to do in my workshops is ask people to ask their grandparents and ask people who can remember the Great Depression, how did you survive? How did our family survive during that tough time? Because there are many times really good practical strategies that people can use that are already in our family. Our family and your family and mine already have those, and we need to capitalize on those and remember those and celebrate those. Well, what resources are available for managing tough times? Here are three of them that are at our website here at Colorado State. Farming and Ranching, Health Hazard Opportunity, Ranching and Farming with Family Members, because it's certainly a challenge to live, work, and play side by side with your brothers and sisters and parents and grandparents. And Transitions and Changes, Who Copes Well, summarizes the research around that, of which I'm only giving a small portion today. Another one is Managing Stress During Tough Times and Making Decisions and Coping Well with Drought. John already referred to this mitnet.extension.org. It's an excellent website that's fully searchable and has nearly 900 resources on all kinds of things that extension educators can use with these kinds of programs. One of the resources we have in Colorado here is Mark Gallegos with the Colorado Agricultural Mediation Program. It's an excellent resource if you know of farm and ranch families that are trying to negotiate with their bankers and their lenders and all. You might give Mark a call. And then the question for those of you in other states, does your state have a similar mediation program, would be my question of you. A great resource I like is Val Farmer's Rural Stress Survival Guide. You can Google it on the internet and you can come up with all five parts of his Rural Stress Survival Guide. I particularly like part three and part four, in which he explains how hardships aids healing and going through the cycle of loss and sharing the pain. This is particularly good for us men to see how other men do it. And Val Farmer is a very popular writer on all kinds of things related to behavioral health in the newspaper up in North Dakota. Working through emotions to get to problem solving, living one day at a time, making a budget that fits your circumstances are some of the things he covers. Barriers to seeking help, because there's often a stigma about seeking behavioral health. And there's some ways we can deal with that, and he talks about some of those. You just Google Rural Stress Survival Guide and it'll pop right up. And then, of course, my friend and colleague Randy Weigel's work up at University of Wyoming is excellent for many men who are not sure how they deal with different behavioral issues. What about men and depression? Because many men don't talk or think much about depression. They don't often know what it is. Agriculture and skin cancer, lenders and angry customers, men seeking help are some of Randy's website's excellent resources for men. The importance of a healthy attitude. When do you need a counselor? Identifying stress on the ranch and learning to relax. And finding your team of experts are some more of his excellent resources. So why is managing tough times important? When times are tough, people are more likely to have problems with those four things I started with: stress, anger, depression, emotional problems, and suicide, and family conflict and disruption of family relationships. And that's why we're talking about it today. I want to share with you briefly some of the trends regarding suicidal trends over the years. If we look at a graph from 1979 to now, 2006 is the latest year for which statistics are available, Wyoming has the unenviable position of being number one in the country right now with about 22.5 per 100,000 suicide rate. We're ninth as of 2006, and ours is a little above 15 per 100,000. This compares with the overall national rate of right at 10.1 per 100,000. I call attention to this part right here. Notice the suicide rates peaked about 1986 or 87. And I always ask groups, what do you think happened right in here that the overall suicide rates dropped and never returned to the about 12, 13 per 100,000. What it is that that was the time at which the FDA had approved the use of Prozac and had been started to be prescribed by psychiatrists and physicians to people who are depressed. And I mention that because the best treatment for clinical depression is a combination of medication and counseling and taking care of oneself and exercise. And this shows what a difference it made having excellent antidepressant medications. This slide for 2006 is the latest for which it's available, and you can see basically the trend, which happens most every year, is that the highest suicide rates are out here in the western states, with Wyoming's being about 22.5 per 100,000, Colorado 15.4 per 100,000 in 2006, and the other states you can see on that slide. What does that translate into? In Wyoming, there was 116 suicides in 2006 to get the 22.5 per 100,000. Montana is about 189 for 20 per 100,000. Colorado is 730, or 2 per day, is what we have here, and we are ninth. I want to show you this slide because it points out who is most at risk. What you see here is that for black women, the suicide rates are at their peaks at about 3 or 4 per 100,000. For white women, it peaks right at 45 to 49 at about 8 per 100,000 and goes down from there as they get up to age 85. Black men come up to about 18 or 19 during the ages of 25 to 29 and again peak in later years. Now look at white males. These are the guys to watch for because look what happens. They're at about 23, 24 per 100,000 in midlife, and then once they get to 75, it goes up to 5 times the national average. That is about 50 per 100,000 versus 10 per 100,000. So if you have a friend who's a farmer or rancher who loses his spouse or partner, and he's white, and he loses his meaning, his life meaning about who he is, namely, I'm a farmer, I'm a rancher. If you have a white male who loses both of those, I'm telling you, they are at risk, and you need to call 1-800-SUICIDE if you are with them to get help. Why is it that 3 out of 4 suicides in Colorado are committed by men? We think it has to do with these masculine scripts that David and Brannon wrote about as far back as 1976. And I would ask all the men online to ask yourself if you got these messages as I did. No sissy stuff. Men are expected to distance themselves from anything feminine. Be a big wheel. Men should be occupationally or financially successful. Be a sturdy oak. Men should be confident and self-reliant. Give them hell. Men should do what is necessary to make it. And then I've added a fifth one from my work with 30 years with men in different states. When you're hurting, be a man. Keep it inside and tell no one. We think these 5 messages that we give our little boys as they're growing up may contribute to the vulnerability of men regarding suicide. Regarding the checklist that I spoke about earlier, it has the signs of depression, sad face, feeling sad, I'm a failure, signs of suicidal intent, how you would recognize if someone was suicidal, and how to refer a person for help. We can talk more about that if you have questions about it, or you can check on it in the checklist, but I'm running out of time. So, what can we do to manage tough times? We can recognize signs of farm and ranch stress, take action, find out what local resources are available, check your yellow pages under counselors. All telephone books that have yellow pages, if you look under counselors, you can find local resources. If you need assistance right now, call 1-800-SUICIDE or 784-2433. There's a live human being on the other end of the line that can connect you with resources that are local 24/7, 365 days a year. And you might think about which is more important, you and your family's net worth or you and your family's self-worth and self-esteem. For more information on managing challenging tough times, contact me. I want to thank you for participating in this. I want to thank Dwayne Griffith and John Hewlett and the Risk Management Education Team and the Western Extension Committee for putting this on. Really appreciate you inviting me to be a part of this. Thank you.
Well, Bob, thank you very much. Obviously, have a wealth of experience, and your speaking from that really is more authoritative than folks that I normally deal with, and so very much appreciate your insights and observations about the current situation as well as what we can do to help. We have got a number of questions that have come in from the audience, and we will put a few to you here. first of which is, a person is wondering, is there usually some sort of an event or some kind of a trigger that usually precedes the canary singing, so to speak, such as a financial crisis or something that actually would cause us to be able to identify a problem within a farm family?
Yes, that's very astute for whoever asked that question. Let me give one example. In one family that I worked with, was the dad and mom, and they had three adult children in their 20s and 30s, all of whom were married. And one of the sons was married to a young woman who was this daughter of a military family. And she had been married to him for, 6 to 12 months, something like that. And what was financial in her case, because she noticed there wasn't income coming in. And she said to her husband, "Where's the monthly?" In my family, we always had monthly paychecks. And her husband then explained, "That's different in ranch and farm families. We only get an income when we sell something. When we sell some cattle, when we sell some sheep, when we sell some hay, if we sell land, if we sell whatever we have, then we get income. So it doesn't come every month." That's one example, but it doesn't have to be that. Sometimes, in another person that has emailed me here recently from another state, she is so fed up with her not having any voice in the decision-making of the family that she found my website and emailed me, and Ruth, I think she could sure use your assistance and your team, because she's feeling very isolated and very discounted by the entire family, and her husband can't protect her from their derogatory comments about her, because he feels like he'll be written out of the will then. So he feels trapped, she feels trapped. And so, yes, I would say it often is something, some kind of incident that the woman perceives as a serious threat to her well-being. And it might be financial, or it might be something else. So, good question.
Okay, thank you for that. Another person has asked, the individual with a problem has to want to improve before they can actually start improving. Are there ways to actually work with the person to transfer that individual into a more effective manner of interacting that you might suggest?
Yes. Let me maybe give an example. About 4 years ago, after I'd given a presentation to over 100 veterinarians here at university, within the next month I got three calls, two from wives and one from a veterinarian. In each case, they were quite worried about a farmer's depression level and suicidal ideation or thinking level. And they were wanting to know, how do I get him to recognize there's a problem? How do I get him to get in to help? And I counseled them over the phone in a variety of ways about, for the spouses at least, to be able to say, "Honey, I love you. I love you so much. We've been married 38 years or whatever it is, and I see you having no energy. I see you lying there on the couch and having no enthusiasm like you used to have, and you talk like you're very exhausted and like you're tired and everything. I'm so worried about you, and there are people that can help in that way, and here are the names of three people, and I'll go with you to go for help. Let's go." And so by mobilizing a spouse or a partner or someone in that family who is able to get into that person that has the problem, it might be a daughter, it might be a son, it might be a father, it might be a mother, it might be a minister, it might be a priest or a coach or a guidance counselor or a rabbi, whoever it is, if you can identify with that family system, whoever is telling you Joe's got a problem or Mary's got a problem, I first ask, can you talk with them directly and get them into the professional help they need? And if they can, then we go that way. But if they can't, then I say, can you talk with them and get them to get help? And they say, no, they write off everything I say. What do I know? Is what they say. Well, is there someone else in your family system who might have his or her ear? If so, then I try to work with them. And so those would be some of the strategies, John, that we use to try to help people, help them recognize the problem and move forward.
Very, very good insights and practical suggestion for dealing with it. Here's another question I think is coming more kind of from a perspective of an ag professional that may become looking at the family situation from the outside, wondering as outsiders, how is it that we identify that there might be a problem and or approach the family to try to find a solution? Or do you have a kind of a suggested process for moving through that?
You mean if you're an economic professional and you see an economic problem, and how do you help the family see it? Is that what you're asking, John?
Well, it may be an economic problem, but it may be an interpersonal problem, or it could be a problem of one of the things you mentioned in your presentation, where, you know, we might notice the fences not as white as maybe they should be, or the livestock maybe not looking like they've been fed for a bit. We see some problem on the farm or within the farm family. Is there some process that you might recommend that we follow to try to get help for that family?
Yes, I think that's an excellent question. For those of us who are extension educators or extension state specialists, or who maybe have known a family for a number of years, if we first of all make sure we know who our resources are, we have to do that first as we see signs of a problem on a farm or ranch. You can contact me and email me regarding some of the other websites that are available where you find therapists and counselors, etc., locally, or you can find them on my website as well, or you can call me, whatever you like. So I would once I saw that a particular family wasn't taking care of their animals and the farmstead was declining and somehow I knew that there was problems, I would first of all think of what's my relationship with this person. And how does he or she look at me? And I start to build on that first, and I plan out what I'm going to say. Plan out when I'm going to do it and where I'm going to do it. When would he or she be most receptive? You got to pick a time when they have time to talk about this, because especially with men, it's pretty vulnerable. They feel vulnerable if you approach that kind of thing, and they'll jump and bile if we're not careful. So pick your time well, if you can do it where it's just you and that other person, particularly if it's a man, or if the spouse has alerted you to this, maybe you can involve him or her with the person who's got the problem as well. And then be upfront and say something like, let's say it's a man, Tom, how long have we known each other? 20 years? Yeah, we've known each other a long time, and so you've been through ups and downs a long time, and we've seen your balance sheets, and you've worked with us here in Extension for 20 years, and so we've had a long time together, and that's been a good time for us to get to know each other. And frankly, Tom, I'm kind of worried. I see some things happening, and I wonder maybe I see things aren't looking like they used to. You know, and all of us can't keep up with all the projects that need to be done on a farm around. I'm just wondering, is it harder for you to keep up with things anymore, or harder to get things done or find the help you need? Or, you know, try to involve them in on it, and then be able to, if you need to, be able to refer them for help to the resources that you already identified locally.
Thank you, Bob. Those are excellent suggestions. I've had a follow-up here, too, wondering... the ag professional may actually have the trust and access to the client, but doesn't have the, you know, the comfort to enter into the discussion. Is there some kind of a key that you might suggest that at some point the professional should refer the individual to get help, as opposed to trying to to offer assistance themselves?
Absolutely. Excellent question, John. What is the key when you're in over your head? I recommend that if your stomach is turning upside down and is tense, you say, my God, I'm in over my head. What do I do here? If you feel that, you bet. That's your signal to make sure that you refer someone to a professionally trained therapist, guidance counselor, mental health professional, marriage and family therapist, psychologist, who is in the local area that you can get them to. Now, I alluded to the thing about stigmas. Many farm and ranch families have big stigmas about, God, I don't want to park my pickup in front of the mental health center. Everybody will know I'm crazy then. So if you're in a place like Walden, you're very fortunate because they have designed their complete Northern Colorado clinic that includes emergency room treatment by a physician, includes day in, day out, child, adolescent, adult care with a physician. It also includes Department of Social Service and includes a psychologist, all in one office. And so when you park your pickup in front of that center, nobody knows who you're going to see. And when I was there last year and talked with the people after they had opened this, in 6 months they said the usage of behavioral health or mental health services has doubled in 6 months because the physician could take the woman that was having trouble with the loss of her husband back down the hall saying, I want you to meet someone. There's a woman here that is just great at talking with about this kind of a problem. So they can ease the person in into counseling. Now, what if you're not in that kind of a setting? Then you might want to go to a more urban setting like Colorado Springs or Denver or Casper or Cheyenne, where you're more anonymous.
Okay. Great suggestions. And thank you again, Bob, for your presentation and comments. They've been very helpful to me and I'm sure to many others. But I'd like to direct a couple of questions yet to Ruth. And this is a really insightful question, I think. It says, some of our traditional community institutions are disappearing, and others are struggling to retain members. Historically, these organizations have really helped individuals and families deal with the struggle and difficult times in agriculture, things like churches, organizations, granges, commodity clubs, etc. They were places where people were able to gather and get support. Are those institutions still in place, and is that where people really can expect to get help today, or are there other kinds of institutions people ought to be looking to for support during these challenging times today?
And that question is directed to me?
Yes, Ruth.
Okay, well, let's see here. The institutions that are going away, yes, I have been 30 years working with Extension. I have been witnessing the change that has been going on with Extension in just about all the states. Tremendous loss of educational support, of information. But what's replacing it is the online education programs, much like what's going on here. Church communities, of course, I have found them to be very important in the counseling, where entire communities of farm families are hurting. I don't know if I agree with it that the church community is going away so much. I think that is still intact. But anything that is requiring public funding, yes, those institutions are taking a huge whack. And probably one of the reasons why I took Annie's project and put it as a not-for-profit, because I wanted to preserve that institution and isolate it from this withdrawal of public funds. So you've hit on a very good question, but as long as we are tied to that tax dollar, that tax base, we can expect to see these kinds of contraction, especially in this economy that we're experiencing.
Yeah, okay, and thank you for your comments. Bob, another question here for you. It says, if you were a farmer realizing you were losing control of the situation, whatever the situation might be here, and that you needed help, how would you go about seeking that help? Would there be some kind of a process you'd follow, or a particular agency that you would contact, or an individual that you would think might be most helpful to people, again, who have self-identified that they need some kind of assistance in their current situation?
Yes, John. If I was a farmer and I started realizing, you know, I'm just not, maybe it's my memory, I'm just not able to remember things like I used to, and I'm drinking more, and I just don't want to see people anymore. If I was a farmer and I was recognizing some of those signs, where would I go? I think a good place to go is to one's physician. And you can go to your physician for a physical, and along the way, be sure and mention what symptoms you see in yourself and talk to him or her about what you see going on with yourself. You might, if you're prone to like to keep kind of like checklists, you might kind of monitor on a scale of 1 to 10. How are you feeling from 10 fantastic and enthusiastic and 1 dismal and depressed? And just for a few days, just kind of keep track of what's your overall score each day, and take that into your physician so she or he knows something about what you're experiencing. And then, in addition to that, what I often recommend to people who recognize they have some kind of symptoms or problems there, if they feel comfortable asking their friends, if you know of someone who's ever dealt with XYZ problem, who's good in the community that can deal with that, and get 2 or 3 recommending the same person, that's an awfully good reference. And then, if you really are ready to go directly to the person, what I recommend people do is look in the yellow pages of your telephone book under counselors and pick out 2 or 3 that seem to grab your attention, and call them up. Call them up and talk with them and ask them, say, you know, if somebody had problem XYZ, what would you do with that kind of situation? How long would it take? How much would it cost? How effective are you at dealing with that situation? You don't have to own it as your own. You can say, you know, somebody who's got a problem like that. And you ask them, how long does it take and what does it cost? And any other questions you're worried about, how would the person know you keep things confidential rather than and put them somewhere to find out? Ask any question you want. Then notice how you feel as they are talking with you. Do you feel like this is a person who kind of puts you off and doesn't respect you? If so, write them off. You're not going to go to that person and trust them. Find someone you can trust. That safe harbor that Ruth was talking about earlier is extremely critical when we seek out a professional around behavioral health issues. You need to find somebody you like, you trust, you feel like you can talk with and open up to. And once you find someone like that, then schedule with them and work with them until you get... So those would be my suggestions there to that situation, John.
Okay, well, excellent. Excellent suggestions, too, I think. Ruth, another question for you. A number of people in the audience noted that your list did not include their state as one that's being addressed by Annie's Project. Could you speak to the plans for expansion of Annie's Project to other states, and or who they might contact to try to get Annie's Project offered where they are at?
Yes, we are planning a nationwide expansion of Annie's Project in 2010, so that's closing on us fairly quickly. They can go to our website, and the easiest way to find it is just Google Annie's Project. The very first link that'll come up, Iowa State does maintain our website for us. And there'll be contact information to the national leadership team, which will begin the process of working with a contact in a state who has the interest, and also work with them to get some grant money through the RME, through the Risk Management Education Centers, as well as from the Risk Management Agency. So I would recommend visiting our website. They have my contact information as well. I'm chair of the National Leadership Team, and we'd love to work with those states that are ready to bring Annie's Project into their state.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Bob, here's another question that's come in. Says the current economic volatility has placed stress on many farm families across the spectrum of U.S. farms, as you've spoken to and many of our presenters have over the last months. But you've noted today that each farm has a different capacity to absorb or deal with that stress. Could you comment on the importance of the individuals involved in the situation of taking ownership of that situation and developing a plan to actually address it?
Absolutely. It's vital that each family have members in that family that do take ownership of the problem. It's easy for us, when we feel like we're victims, to blame others for whatever problems are there. It's easy for us when we feel like a victim to blame the banker, to blame the economy, to blame a lot of other people, because so many of the stressors that farmers and ranchers face are outside of their control. They don't have control over the weather. They don't have control over the price of fertilizer or the price of diesel or the price they're going to get for their yearlings or for their milk. So it's easy to feel like a victim, but as you put it, John, it's important that we take charge of especially what's inside of our mind and inside of our hearts, etc., in terms of the perception we think about it. If we have a negative perception about our own financial situation, how can we switch that? What can we see that is good about our situation? How can we reframe? That means put another frame around the picture so that we can see the positive and get some energy and move on to problem solving. It's vital that we do that, because if we don't, we're going to get awfully depressed and we may get worse.
Great. Thank you for those insights. I've got one final question that I'd like to put to both of you. And this is kind of a general question. So we'll start with Ruth. Put you on the spot first. Sorry. But the question is, the person is wondering if we as extension professionals are doing enough currently to assist and support farm families as this current situation of economic volatility and challenging times is unfolding. Ruth, do you have some insights about that?
As a matter of fact, I have lots of insights on that one. What is Extension's role when these farms go through these peaks and valleys that they go through? Just like Annie's Project has a mission statement, I think people who work Extension need to look back and see what their mission is through Extension. And what it is in a lot of states is you build partnerships, and you build education and you build skills that prepare people for the ups and downs. Sometimes we take on problems in Extension that we're not really trained to take on. As Bob has talked about here, we sometimes get in over our heads. You know, we want to be good listeners to these families, but let's face it, some of the issues that we've talked about are not just family issues. They're not just economic issues. They are clinical type issues that need to be referred on to the professionals. And for those of us who are working or used to work in Extension, it's important that we know what our mission is and at what point we cross a boundary that we're going to be more effective if we pass this off to other professionals.
Thank you. Those are really good insights. Bob, your thoughts. You kind of have a little more of a clinical background, and you work a lot with troubled farmers and ranchers across not only Colorado but elsewhere. Are there other things that you see that we might should be doing as Extension professionals?
Yes, John. I think things like this agriculture in uncertain times is a good start. It's a good way to get more awareness about what Extension people and retired Extension people can offer, but we can do more. We can, you know, our mission has to do with providing research-based information, not just which program has the prettiest three-color slick design on it, but which ones are research-based and which ones are effective empirically. If we, as states and regions, would look at which longer programs are actually effective and promote and teach those, I think we could have a greater effect on our farmers and ranchers and stick to our mission, which is education. What we find in our research is that anything under about 2 hours doesn't really lead to behavioral change in the long run. But our 6 2-hour weekly sessions do have long-term changes that people make. And if we would invest some time and energy into those long-term types of programs, 6 2-hour weekly or longer types of programs, I think we would see some dramatic changes in our farm and ranch families.
Well, thank you for those thoughts. Very insightful. And again, both of you, thank you very much for your excellent formal presentations, but I've really enjoyed the interplay and exchange we've had around these questions we've had come in this morning. Really have learned quite a lot about where you all see we are and where we could be headed to better support farms and farm families in these difficult times. I want to move now to close our webinar for today. You can see on the screen we have a listing. If you're interested in being notified of our upcoming webinars, you can send an email to the web address that's listed there, westrme@wsu.edu. You might also want to subscribe to our blog. We have on this home screen of that Ag and Uncertain Times webpage, RSS feed, which you can subscribe to and be notified of posts there. Or you can stay tuned to the schedule that's listed on those pages outlining the presenters and the times that are upcoming for our coming presentations. Where do we go from here? Well, there are a number of different recordings that we've mentioned this morning that are available on our website. We've also got posted the slide materials for today's presenters, as well as all of our previous presenters, and the handouts, in particular the checklist that Bob mentioned this morning, is available there, but handouts from several of our past presentations are also available. We have contact information there for more information and much more. If you'd like to take a look at that, Ag and Uncertain Times webpage is available. I'll give you some instructions to access that here in just a second. What's coming next, and I briefly alluded to earlier, but in November, our topic for the month will be operating in risky environments. And under that banner, we intend to have presenters who will be discussing various different risk management strategies people might be looking to adopt and might fit for their situation, various resources and educational programs that are available and are under development for folks to take advantage of in terms of managing risk, as well as the tools and techniques for actually beginning to manage the risks that they're facing in the currently difficult times. So we recommend that webinar series if you're interested in learning more about risk. We'd also like to hear from you if you have suggestions for additional topics or presentations that we've not yet covered. You can send us an email at the WestRME address listed on the screen, or you can drop a note in the chat pod there to get those suggestions to us today. And finally, we've mentioned a number of different URLs, websites, etc., in today's presentation. In order to give you a single place to record all of those, we are putting now on the screen a file share pod, which will allow you to download a flyer which contains all of that information. To get it to your computer, you click on the file's name listed in the pod that you want to download. That then activates the Save to My Computer button at the bottom. Click on that button and then download to your own desktop, and you can print those or save them for later reading. Let me close today's webinar by again extending our thanks to both presenters for their excellent presentation on farm families and how to assist them better as ag professionals. I want to also thank again our Ag and Uncertain Times team and their sponsoring institutions for helping to make this series possible. And especially would like to thank all of the participants in today's webinar. We sincerely hope that you find today's content of value in your work with farm families. We hope to see you again in one of our upcoming programs, and until then, we offer you our sincere hope for success in meeting the challenges of today's uncertain times. For Ag in Uncertain Times, I'm John Hewlett.